flag. "Henry, look," I said, leaning into him and pointing to a sign with his name on it. He took a moment to understand. Then when he finally saw his name, he gasped. "Hey!" He was so excited, he lifted my hand off his shoulder and kissed it. Had anyone else done that, it might have been unwelcome. But from him, the gesture felt so innocent, I wasn't bothered at all. "We love you, Princess Edelin," someone called, and I waved in the direction of the sound. "Long live the king! Bless you, princess!" I mouthed my thanks to them for their support, and I felt encouraged. It wasn't every day that I saw my people face to face, heard their voices, and sensed how they needed us. I knew they loved me, of course. I was going to be their queen. But typically, when I did leave the palace, the focus was on Mom or Dad. It felt amazing to have so much of the affection finally centered on me. Maybe I could be as beloved as my father. The parade went on, with people calling our names and throwing flowers. It was turning out to be the spectacle I'd hoped. I couldn't have asked for anything better, until we reached the final stretch of the route. Something hit me that was clearly not a flower. I looked, to see a runny egg dripping down my dress and onto my bare legs. After that, half a tomato hit me, then something else I couldn't identify. I dropped down, covering myself with my arms. "We need jobs," someone shrieked. "The castes still live." I peeked out and saw a cluster of people protesting and hurling their rotten food at the float. Some held angry signs. They must have hidden from the guards until now. And others threw disgusting words at me, calling me things that I'd never imagined even the worst of people saying. Hail dropped down and lay in front of me, wrapping an arm around my shoulder.
"Don't worry, I've got you."
"I don't understand," I mumbled. Henry got down on one knee, trying to hit anything that came near us, and Hale guarding me without wavering, even though I heard him grunt and felt him clench up when he was hit with something heavy. I recognized General Ledger's voice, shouting at the selected to get down. As soon as everyone was low and secure, the float sped up, moving faster than it was probably designed to. People who actually cared about the parade booed as we hurtled past them, stealing their opportunity to catch a glimpse of the whole entourage. I heard the float hit the gravel of the palace driveway, and the instant we came to a stop, I pulled back from Hale and jumped to my feet. I hurried to the ladder and worked my way down. "Edelin," Mom cried. "I'm fine." Dad stood in shock.
"Love, what happened?"
"Hell if I know." I stormed off, humiliated. As if the whole thing wasn't embarrassing enough, the sad eyes of everyone around me made it even worse. "Poor thing," their expressions seemed to say, and I hated their pity more than I hated the people who thought this was acceptable. I scurried through the palace, head down, hoping no one would stop me. It wasn't my lucky day, of course, because as I rounded onto the landing of the second floor, Josie was there.
"Ew! What happened to you?"
I didn't answer, moving even faster. Why? What had I done to deserve this? Nina was cleaning when I walked in.
"Miss! Help!"
I whimpered before bursting into tears. She came over and embraced me, getting my mess all over her pristine uniform.
"Hush, now, we'll clean you up. You get undressed and I'll start the bath."
Why would they do this to me?
Who did it?
My people, I answered in pain. My subjects. Why would they do this? Nina swallowed, disappointed for my sake.
I don't know.
I wiped at my face and makeup and something green came off on my hand. The tears fell again.
Let me start that bath.
She scurried away and I stood there, helpless. I knew the water would get rid of the mess, and I knew it would take away the smell. But no amount of scrubbing would ever wash away this memory.
Hours later, I was scrunched up on a chair in Dad's sitting room, bundled in my coziest sweater. Despite the heat, my clothes were my only armor at the moment, and the layers made me feel safe. Mom and Dad were both drinking something a little stronger than wine, a rare occasion, though it didn't appear to be doing much for their nerves. Aaron knocked but came in before anyone answered the door. Our eyes met, and I rushed across the room, throwing my arms around him.
"Sorry, Edie," he said, kissing my hair.
"Thanks."
"Glad you could come, Aaron."
Dad was looking at some of the stills from the parade that the photographers had provided him, stacking them on top of several of today's papers.
"Of course."
He put his arm around my shoulder and walked me to my seat, going to stand with Dad while I curled back up into a ball.
"I still can't believe this happened," Mom said, reaching the bottom of her glass.
I could see her weighing in her head whether or not to have another. She decided against it.
"Me either,"
I mumbled, still suffering under the surge of hatred those people felt for me.
"What did I do?"
"Nothing,"
Mom assured me, coming to sit beside me.
"They're mad at the monarchy, not you. Today your face was the one they could see, and that's the one they attacked. It could have been any of us."
"I felt so certain a selection would lift their mood. I thought they would delight in this."
Dad stared at the pictures, still shocked. We sat silent for a while. He'd been so wrong.
"Well," Aaron started, "they might have if it wasn't Edelin."
We all gaped at him.
"Excuse me?"
I nearly started crying all over again, pained by his cruel words.
"Mom just said it could have been you or her or anyone, so why are you blaming me?"
He pursed his lips, looking around the room.
"Fine, we'll talk about this. If Edelin was a typical girl, one who wasn't raised to be in control all the time, this would probably look different. But pick up any of those papers," he said, gesturing to the pile.
Dad did.
"In general, she comes across as distant, and every picture from last night's dinner is uncomfortable to look at. You're nearly scowling in some of them.
If you were in my shoes, you'd know how hard this is." Aaron rolled his eyes at me. More than anyone, he knew I wasn't intending to pick a mate in the next few months. Mom left me and peeked over Dad's shoulder. "He's right. On your own, you look like an island, and with the selected, there's no chemistry, no romance. Listen, I'm not performing for anyone. I refuse to act all dopey over a bunch of boys to entertain people." I crossed my arms, determined. 2 days in, and this was already a disaster. I knew it wouldn't work, and now I was stuck in this humiliating situation. Could they dare ask me to sink further into shame for the sake of something that clearly wasn't going to help? The room went silent, and foolishly, I thought for a moment that I'd won.
"Edelin,"
I looked at Dad, trying not to be moved by the pleading in his eyes.
"You promised me 3 months. We're trying hard to brainstorm on our end, but we can't extinguish that fire if we're dealing with new ones. I need you to try."
In that moment, I saw something I hadn't really noticed before. His age. Dad wasn't old by any stretch of the word, but he had done more in his lifetime than most people twice his age could even hope for. He was in a constant state of sacrifice. For Mom, for us, for his people. And he was exhausted. I swallowed, knowing that I'd need to find a way to look like I cared about the selection, if only for his sake. "I assume you know how to get in touch with the press?" Dad nodded.
"Yes, we have trusted photographers and journalists on call."
"Get a few cameras in the men's parlor tomorrow morning. I'll take care of this." Chapter 11. The next morning I skipped breakfast with my family, so I could compose myself. I didn't want anyone seeing how rattled yesterday had left me,
and I felt like I was building a shield around myself, one steady breath at a time. Nina was humming as she tidied my room, and it was one of the best things. Not only was she gentle with me after I came in yesterday, she didn't ask a single question or bring up the topic again. I didn't have to worry about her, which was why she couldn't leave the palace one day. What about me? I think it's a pants day, Nina, I called. She stopped humming. More black? At least a little. We shared a smile as she handed me my tight black pants, which I paired with heels that would kill me by noon. I pulled on a flowy shirt and a vest, and found a tiara with jewels that matched the shirt. I was ready. I decided that I was going to do exactly what Dad had done with his selection. On his first day, he sent home at least 6 girls. I was planning to eliminate nearly twice as many. Certainly weeding out all the unlikely candidates would show how seriously I was taking this process, that the outcome was important to me. I wished there was a way to do this without the cameras, but they were a necessary evil. I had a mental list prepared, and I knew vaguely what I wanted to say, but if I made a mistake with reporters present, it would be just as bad as yesterday, meaning I needed to be perfect. Because the women's room was considered the property of the queen, any male had to ask permission before entering. The men's parlor had been thrown together for my convenience, so no such formality stood, and I was able to complete a rather dazzling entrance by pulling the double doors open and letting the rush of wind blow back my hair. The selected all hurried to face me, some jumping to their feet or pulling themselves away from the reporters accompanying the cameras. I passed Paisley Fisher, noticing that he audibly gulped as I stopped. Smiling, I placed a hand on his shoulder. You can go. He glanced at the people beside him.
Go?
Yes, go. As in, thank you for your participation, but your presence at the palace is no longer required. When he lingered, I leaned in, breathing my instructions. The longer you stay, the more embarrassing it becomes. You should leave. I pulled back, noting the marked anger in his eyes as he slowly left the room. I couldn't figure out why he was so vexed. It wasn't as if I'd kicked him or shouted. I internally praised myself for getting rid of someone so childish and tried to remember my list. Who was next? Oh, this one was well deserved. Blakely, isn't it? His voice squeaked and he started again.
Yes, Your Highness.
When we met, you couldn't stop staring at my breasts. His face went pale, as if he seriously thought he was so subtle no one would notice. Make sure you get an equally satisfactory look at my backside as you leave. I made sure to address him loud enough that the cameras and the other boys would hear. Hopefully his humiliation would prevent others from thinking they could behave similarly. He ducked his head and left the room. I stopped in front of Jamal. You can leave. Next to him, Connor was breaking out into a sweat again. You can join him. They shared a confused look and left together, shaking their heads. I came upon Kyle next. Unlike most of the others, he didn't avert his eyes. On the contrary, he stared into mine, and I could see him pleading for me to end his misery and get him out of here. I might have, if I didn't think his mother would kill me, as I would surely have to make him leave the palace, and if I hadn't seen his name on the most signs yesterday. Of course, Kyle was the hometown pick, so maybe the crowd was biased. Still, I couldn't get rid of him. Not yet. Beside him, Hale swallowed. I remembered how he'd protected me during the parade, knowing he'd taken hits that were intended for me, some of which had seemed rather painful. I came near and spoke softly. Thank you for yesterday. You were very brave.
It was nothing, he assured me, though the suit couldn't be saved.
He said it jokingly,
trying to make the whole thing seem like less of an issue than it was. Shame. I lowered my eyes and continued walking. I didn't think the cameras would have picked up the conversation, but I knew they'd see our smiles. I wondered what would be made of that. "Isher," I said to a slick-haired, gangly young man. "No, thank you." He didn't even question it. He blushed and fled as quickly as he could. I heard a mumbling and wondered who would dare to speak right now. As I whipped my head around, I saw Henry's translator relaying the scene in Henry's ear as quickly and quietly as he could. Henry's eyes were stressed, but when he finished listening, he looked up at me and smiled. He had such a goofy little grin, and his hair curled in a way that he looked like he was playing a game while standing still. Ugh. I had intended to end his suffering and send him home, but he looked far too pleased to be here. Some of them had to stay anyway, and Henry was harmless. I simply flicked my hand as I passed Nolan, and announced to Jamie that his request for a payout was the most offensive way to introduce himself. I continued to stalk around the room, checking to make sure I covered everyone I wanted gone. The reactions of the spared boys ranged from interesting to bizarre. Holden kept swallowing, waiting for the bomb to drop, while Jack smiled in a strange way, almost as if he found this all entertaining or exciting. I finally came up to Ian, who didn't look away, but chose to wink at me. I noticed he was sitting alone, with only a leather-bound journal and pen to keep him company. Not here to make friends, it seemed. "A wink is a bit bold, don't you think?" I asked quietly.
"What princess would want a man by her side who wasn't bold?"
I raised an eyebrow, amused. "You're not at all worried about being overconfident, are you?"
"No. It's who I am, and I don't intend to hide anything from you."
There was something almost frightening about his presence, but I liked that he had the nerve to be real. I noted the camera coming to hover behind him, trying to capture my expression, and I shook my head at him, suppressing a smirk. I moved on, adding Arizona, Brady, Polly, and McKendrick to the ranks of the evicted. If I'd counted correctly, that was 11 gone. Once the eliminated had all left, I went to the door, turning to face the remaining candidates. "If you're still here, that means you've done something between our first meeting and now to impress me, or have at least had the common sense not to offend me." Some smiled, probably thinking of Blakely, while others stood there stunned. "I want to encourage you all to be deliberate, because I take this very seriously. This isn't a game, gentlemen. This is my life." I pulled the doors shut behind me and heard the flurry of activity pick up in my wake. Some laughed or sighed, while someone simply repeated, oh my goodness, again and again. The reporters' voices rose above them all, encouraging them to recount their feelings on the first elimination. Letting out a long breath, I walked away feeling confident. I'd taken a decisive step, and Dad could rest easy now, knowing the selection was properly underway and that I wouldn't let him down. To make up for the lackluster first evening and the complete absence of interaction after the parade yesterday, the boys were invited that night to a pre-dinner tea, to meet the household and, of course, speak with me, their beloved would-be bride. Mom and Dad were there, along with Aaron, Caden, and Austin. Josie came with the Woodworks, who were working very hard not to hover over their son. And Miss Lucy was circling the room, not really speaking to anyone, but looking lovely. She never seemed to care for crowds. I'd changed into a gown for dinner and put on another pair of toe-destroying heels. I was still riding my post-elimination buzz, so pleased to be making steps to help Dad. It dwindled quickly, though, as Aaron walked toward me with a warning glare in his eyes.
"What in the world did you do to them?"
he asked accusingly. "Nothing," I vowed,
I held an elimination. I wanted to show everyone that this was important to me, like Dad.
Aaron pressed his palm into his forehead.
Have you had your nose buried in reports all day?
Of course I have, I replied. You might not have noticed, but that's kind of my job.
Aaron leaned in.
The clips on the news have painted you to be a black widow. Your face was smug as you kicked them out. And you got rid of a third of them, Edlin. That doesn't make the candidates look important. It makes them look disposable.
I could feel the blood draining from my face as Aaron continued in a whisper.
Two of them have asked in the most circumspect and quiet ways possible if there was a chance that you prefer women.
I let out a sound that wasn't quite a laugh. Of course, because the only way I could possibly like men is if I bowed down at their feet.
This isn't the time to make a stand, Edlin. You need to be gracious.
Pardon me, Your Highness.
Aaron and I both turned at the sound of our title, and I found myself with a reporter in my face, her eyes and smile bordering on manic.
I hate to interrupt, but I was wondering if I could have a brief interview with the princess before my deadline.
The reporter showed her teeth again, and I couldn't stop myself from feeling I was about to be eaten alive, either figuratively or literally.
She'd be happy to,
Aaron offered, kissing my forehead as he disappeared. My pulse sped. I hadn't prepared myself for this. But of all the things that could happen right now, I refused to let the public see me sweat.
Your Highness, you eliminated 11 suitors today. Do you think this cut was a bit drastic?
I squared my shoulders and gave her a sweet grin.
I can certainly see why some might think that,
I answered generously.
But this is a very important decision. I don't think it would be wise to spend time on young men who are rude or unimpressive. I'm hoping with a smaller pool, I'll be able to get to know these gentlemen much better.
I scanned the words in my head. Nothing humiliating or incriminating in there.
Yes, but why were you so harsh? For a few, you simply said no or flicked your hand.
I tried not to let the worry show on my face. At the time, those things had seemed kind of funny.
When my father is stern, no one chastises him. I don't think it's fair that when I act similarly, I'm seen as cruel. I'm making a huge decision, and I'm trying to be wise about it.
While I wanted to scream those words, I said them with the voice I'd been trained to use in interviews, and I even managed to smile through most of it.
But one of them cried after you left the room, she informed me.
What? I asked, worrying that my face was growing paler by the second.
One of the selected cried when the elimination ended. Do you think that's a normal response, or that maybe you elicited it by being severe with them?
I swallowed, scrambling for anything to say.
I have three brothers. They all cry, and I can assure you, the reasons rarely make sense to me.
She chuckled.
So you don't think you were too hard on them?
I knew what she was doing. Digging at the same question until I snapped. She was very close to getting the better of me.
I can't imagine what it would be like on the other end of the selection process, and to be removed so early on, but besides my father, no one here knows what it's like to be on this side of it either. I'm going to do my best to find a worthy husband, and if that man can't handle a harsh word or two, he definitely wouldn't make it as a prince. Trust me on that.
I reached out and touched her arm, as if this was gossip or a joke. It was a disarming technique.
Speaking of suitors, I hope you'll excuse me. I need to go spend some time with them.
She opened her mouth to ask another question, but I turned away, holding my head high. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't go straight to the drinks. I couldn't unleash every swear word I knew into the air, and I couldn't run into the arms of my parents. I had to look content. So I walked around the room, smiling and batting my lashes at the boys as I passed them. I noticed those small things alone made them grin at me or change their posture. Instead of retreating, their expression softened. And I could see these tiny moments of gentleness
were erasing their memories of this morning in the men's parlor already. I wished with everything I had that the public would let it slide as quickly as the boys did. I figured eventually one of them would be brave enough to speak to me. And it turned out, that person was Hale.
"So, we're at a tea party," he said, falling into step beside me. "What kind of tea does the princess like best?"
He sipped from his own cup, smiling shyly. Hale had an effortless warmth about him, similar to Miss Marley, and it was easy to hold a conversation with him. At the moment, I was more grateful he was the first one to approach me than he could have ever guessed. He'd rescued me twice now. It depends on my mood, or the season. Like, I can't seem to enjoy a white tea during the winter, but black tea is a good staple.
Agreed.
Hale stood there nodding. I heard someone cried after I left today. Is that true? Hale's eyes widened and he let out a whistle.
Yeah, it was Leland. I thought he'd broken a bone or something. Took us nearly an hour to calm him down.
What happened?
You happened. You come in, prowling around the room, eliminating people at random. I guess he has a timid disposition, and you really shook him.
I spotted Leland standing alone in a corner. If I was sincerely looking for a husband, he'd be gone already. I was a little surprised he hadn't asked to leave. I think it came out more callously than I'd intended. Hale laughed once.
You don't have to be callous at all. We all know who you are and what you can do. We respect that.
Tell that to the guy who asked when he was getting paid, I muttered. He didn't have a response for that, and I felt bad for bringing our conversation to a halt. So, what is it today? I asked, trying to regain my composure.
I'm sorry?
How are you proving yourself to me today? He smiled.
Today, it's my promise never to bring you white tea in the winter.
He didn't say goodbye or bow, but walked away, seeming hopeful. Over his shoulder, Baden caught my eye. My first impression of him had nothing to do with our initial conversation. I only saw him as the boy Aunt May thought had promise. I could tell he was debating whether or not to walk over. I looked down at the floor and peeked his way from under my lashes. I felt foolish trying to play this part, but it worked, and he started to cross the floor. I thought back to the interviewer, musing over how funny it was that I'd been taught plenty of disarming techniques for interviews or negotiations, but when it came to boys, I was left to figure it out alone. Baden looked eager to speak to me, but we were both shocked when another boy coming from a different direction arrived at us at the exact same moment.
Gunner,
Baden greeted.
How are you enjoying the party? It's excellent. I was just coming to thank Her Highness for hosting it. It's been a pleasure to meet your younger brothers.
Oh dear, what did they do? Baden laughed, and Gunner tried to suppress a smile.
Austin is awfully energetic.
I sighed. I blame my parents. It seems that by the time you get to your fourth child, your desire to instill certain values goes out the window.
I like him, though. Hope he'll be around.
It's hard to say. Austin's the hardest to keep tabs on. Even his nanny, whom he despises, by the way, can't keep up with him. Either he's causing chaos or he's hiding. Baden jumped in. I wondered if he was trying to flirt or just seem brave.
Those two moods are so different. Is everyone in your family like that?
I knew what he was asking. Was I the kind of girl who aimed to find solace or cause a stir with no in-between? Unquestionably. Baden nodded.
Good to know. I'll buy a shield and some binoculars.
And darn it, I giggled. I didn't mean to, but I did. I tried not to be upset for letting my guard down. Hopefully it would make for some good pictures. I curtsied and continued around the space. I saw Henry across the room, Eric shadowing his every step. When our eyes met, he began walking my way immediately, grinning from ear to ear.
Hello,
Yuva Ilta.
He kissed my cheek, which again would have been shocking from anyone else.
He says good evening.
Oh, Hivat Ila, I mumbled, attempting to duplicate his words. He chuckled as I butchered his language.
Good, good.
Was he always this cheerful? I turned to Eric. How bad was it really? His tone was kind, but he wasn't going to lie.
I'm sorry to say, there was no way I could have even guessed at what that was.
I smiled genuinely. The pair of them were so unassuming. And considering how alienated Henry must have felt, that was saying something. Before I could continue the conversation, Josie was beside me.
Great party, Edlin. You're Henry, right? I've seen your picture.
She said in a rush, sticking her hand out to greet him. He must have been confused, but he accepted the gesture all the same.
I'm Josie. Edlin and I are practically sisters.
She gushed. Except that we're not related at all, I added. Eric tried to convey everything to Henry quickly and quietly, which distracted Josie.
Who are you? She asked. I don't remember seeing your picture.
I'm Sir Henry's translator. He only speaks Finnish.
Josie looked incredibly disappointed. I realized that she must have come over because she found Henry attractive. He certainly seemed younger than most of the others, and did have that happy-go-lucky air about him, which she must have thought suited her better than me.
So, she began, how does he, like, even live?
Without even checking with Henry, Eric spoke up.
If you're practically Her Highness's sister, then I'm sure the palace has afforded you an excellent education. So, of course, you know the relations between Ilya and Swendwe are old and strong, drawing many Swendish people to settle here, making small communities and vice versa. It's not difficult at all.
I pressed my lips together, trying not to grin at how articulately he put Josie in her place. Josie nodded.
Oh, of course.
And that was as hard as she was willing to try.
Excuse me.
I'm sorry, I whispered once she was out of earshot. It has nothing to do with you two. She's just terrible.
No offense taken, Eric replied honestly.
He conversed back and forth for a moment with Henry in Finnish, presumably catching him up on what just happened.
Pardon me, I need to speak with someone, but I'll see you at dinner.
I curtsied and left them, searching for any sort of retreat. I'd been totally thrown off by that interview earlier, and I was proud that I pulled myself back together in the aftermath, but Josie had the ability to ruffle me without fail. I saw Mom alone and rushed over to her, hoping for some solace. Instead, I was greeted by a glare similar to Aaron's when I'd first come in.
Why didn't you tell us that was what you were going to do?
She asked quietly, holding a smile as if nothing was wrong. I did the same as I answered. I thought it would be good. That's what Dad did.
Yes, but he did it on a much smaller scale and privately. You put their shame on display. No one will admire you for that.
I huffed. I'm sorry. Really, I didn't realize. She put an arm around me.
I don't mean to be hard on you. We know you're trying.
Just then, a photographer came up to get a candid photo of us talking. I wondered what the headline for that one would be. Something about the selected teaching the selector, maybe.
What am I supposed to do now?
She looked around the room, double-checking that no one could hear.
Just consider a little romance. Nothing scandalous, for goodness sake, she added quickly. But watching you fall in love, that's what the people want to see.
I can't make that happen. I can't.
America, dear,
Dad called. It looked like Austin had spilled something on himself, and Mom rushed over to lead him away. I would have bet money that whatever just happened was a deliberate attempt on Austin's part to get out of the room.
I stood there alone, trying to be inconspicuous as I scanned the room. Too many strangers. Too many eyes watching and waiting for me to perform. I was ready for the selection to be over about 4 hours ago. I took a deep breath. 3 months would buy me freedom. I could do this. I had to. I walked across the room deliberately, knowing who I needed to speak to. Once I found him, I leaned in and spoke in his ear. Come to my room, 8 o'clock sharp. Tell no one. Chapter 12. I paced as I waited for the knock to come. Kyle was really the only person I could trust with this task, though I was loath to ask him. I was prepared to strike a bargain, but I wasn't sure what I could offer him yet. I felt confident he'd have his own ideas. The raps on the door were quiet, and I could almost hear the question in them. What am I doing here? I pulled the door open, and there, right on time, was Kyle.
Your Highness, he said with a comical bow. I've come to sweep you off your feet.
Hardy har.
Get in here. Kyle walked in and surveyed my shelves.
Last time I was in your room, you had a collection of wooden ponies.
Outgrew that,
but not being a bossy tyrant.
Nope, just like you didn't outgrow being an insufferable bookworm.
Is this how you went over all your dates?
I smirked. More or less. Sit down. I have a proposition for you. He spotted the wine I'd provided and wasted no time in pouring himself a glass.
You want some?
I sighed. Please, we'll both need it. He paused, eyeing me before continuing.
No, I'm nervous. What do you want?
I took my glass, trying to remember how I wanted to explain this to him. You know me, Kyle. You've known me my whole life.
True. In fact, I was thinking yesterday that I have a vague recollection of you running around in nothing but a diaper. It was a good look.
I rolled my eyes and tried not to laugh. Anyway, you, to some degree, understand my personality, who I am when the cameras aren't rolling. He sipped, contemplating my words.
I think I understand you when they're on as well, but please continue.
I hadn't thought about that, how he'd seen me go through the many phases of growing up, both on and off screen. There was a switch I had to flip when I was on display, and he knew it. The selection wasn't my idea, but it's something I need to put my best effort into. I think I am, personally, but the public expects me to be a giddy little girl next to all of you, and I don't think I can do that. I can't act stupid.
Actually,
don't. He smiled wickedly and took another sip of his wine. You're such a pain. Why am I even bothering?
No, go on. You don't want to act stupid.
He set down his glass and leaned forward. I took a breath, hunting for the words again. They want romance, but I'm not prepared to behave like that publicly. At least, not when I haven't truly connected with someone. Still, I need to give them something. I ducked my head and peeked up at him from under my lashes.
Like what exactly?
A kiss.
A kiss?
Just a little one. And you're the only person I can ask, because you'd know it wasn't real and things wouldn't get complicated. And I'm willing to give you something in return. He raised his eyebrows.
What?
I shrugged.
Whatever you want, really.
Within reason. I can't offer you a country or anything.
Could you talk to my mom? Help get me out of here.
And go where exactly?
Anywhere.
He sighed desperately.
My mom. I don't know what happened that made her so crazy loyal to your parents, but she's got it in her head that this is our home forever. Do you know how much work it took for me to get out of here and take that one accelerated course? I want to travel. I want to build. I want to do more than read about things. Sometimes
I think one more day behind these walls might kill me.
I get that, I whispered, not thinking. I straightened up. I can make it happen. As soon as an opportunity becomes available, I will help convince your parents that you need to leave the palace. He paused a second, then threw back the rest of his wine.
One kiss?
Just one.
When?
Tonight. There will be a photographer waiting down the hall at 9, hopefully very well hidden, because I'd like to pretend he isn't there. Kyle nodded.
Fine. One kiss.
Thank you. We sat in silence, watching the hands on the clock. After 3 minutes, I couldn't take it anymore. What do you mean you want to build things? He lit up.
That's what I study, architecture and design. I like dreaming up structures, figuring out how to make them, and sometimes how to make them particularly beautiful.
That's actually really interesting, Kyle.
I know.
He gave one of his crooked smiles, just like his dad's, and it was fun to see how excited he was about it.
Do you want to see?
See what?
Some of my designs. I have them in my room. My old one, not my selected one. So they're just down the hall.
Sure. I took one last sip of wine and followed him out. Except for a guard or two, the hallway was empty as Kyle and I made our way to his room. He opened the door and flicked on the lights, and I had to stop myself from gasping. He was a mess. His bed wasn't made, there were clothes amassed in a corner, and several dirty plates were piled on his side table.
I know what you're thinking. How does he keep it so immaculate?
He read my mind, I said, trying not to appear completely repulsed. At least it didn't smell bad.
About a year ago, I asked the staff to stop cleaning for me. I do it myself, but the selection kind of caught me off guard, so I just left it how it was.
He started kicking objects under his bed and trying to pull the things within his reach a little straighter.
Why don't you let them clean? I'm a grown man, I can take care of myself.
I didn't think he meant that as a dig at me, but it stung all the same.
Anyway, this is my workspace.
In the far corner of the room, the walls were covered in pictures and posters of everything from skyscrapers to mud huts. His desk was overflowing with prints he'd drawn up, and models built from wooden scraps and thin strips of metal.
Did you make all these?
I asked, gently touching a structure that slightly twisted as it went upward.
Yep. Concept, design. I'd love to create real buildings one day. I'm studying, but there's only so much I can learn without getting my hands on things, you know?
Kyle. I took in all of it. The colors and lines. The amount of time and thought that must have gone into each of them. This is amazing.
It's just me fooling around.
No, don't do that. Don't make it seem like less than it is. I could never do something like this.
Sure you could.
He went over and pulled out a ruler shaped like a T and laid it over something he was already working on.
See? It's just a matter of looking at the lines and doing the math.
Ugh, more math. I do enough of that as it is. He laughed.
But this is fun math.
Fun math is an oxymoron. Kyle and I moved to his couch, and we went through a few books of his favorite architects, studying their styles. He seemed particularly interested in how some worked with the land around them, and others worked against it.
I mean, look at that,
he said enthusiastically, after nearly every page. I couldn't believe it had taken me all these years to see this side of him. He tucked himself inside a shell, shutting himself away from others here, because the palace had trapped him. Behind the books and the snippy remarks, there was a curious, engaging, and sometimes very charming person. I felt like I'd been lied to. Was someone going to pop around the corner and tell me Josie was really a saint? Eventually, Kyle looked down to his watch.
It's 10 after 9.
Oh, we should go then. But I didn't want to get up. Kyle's messy room was one of the most comfortable places I'd ever been.
Yeah.
Kyle closed the book and put it back on the shelf. Even though that corner was as haphazard as the rest of the room, I could see the care he took with it. I waited for him by the door, suddenly nervous.
Here, he said, offering his hand. It's the end of a date, right?
I placed my hand in his. Thanks for showing me your work and for doing this. I promise to pay you back.
I know.
He opened the door and walked me down the hall. When do you think we last held hands? I wondered out loud.
Probably a game of Red Rover or something.
Probably. We were quiet as we headed toward my room. When we reached it, I turned back to Kyle and watched as he swallowed. Nervous? I whispered.
Nah.
He smiled, but he also fidgeted.
So, good night.
Kyle leaned down, lips meeting mine, holding them there. Then his lips parted and closed, and parted again. I drew a breath in the moment between kisses, sensing he would come back again. He did, and thank goodness, because I hadn't been kissed like this before and I needed more. The few times I'd kissed boys were rushed, sloppy moments hiding in a coat room or behind a statue. But this, with so much air around us and no one coming to check on me, it was different. I leaned into Kyle, still holding him, and he brought up his free hand and cupped my cheek. He held my lips to his for what felt like forever before pulling back. And even when he did pull away, his nose stayed right against mine, so close that when he whispered, I could smell what was left of the wine on his breath.
Do you think that was enough?
I don't know.
Just to be sure.
He pressed his mouth to mine again, and I was so surprised to get another kiss like that. It felt like my bones were turning into mush. I wrapped my fingers up into his hair, shocked at myself for having the urge to hold him in that pose all night. He pulled back again, looking into my eyes, and there was something different. Was he feeling that funny warmth creep into his arms and chest and head, too? Thank you, I murmured.
Anytime. I mean.
He shook his head, laughing at himself.
You know what I mean.
Good night, Kyle.
Good night, Edlin.
He gave me a quick kiss on the cheek before heading toward the stairs that led back to his temporary quarters. I watched him go, and told myself that the only reason I was smiling like that was because the cameras were hidden somewhere. Not because of anything Kyle Woodwork had done. Chapter 13. So, I think I managed to distract everyone for a while. I held on to Aaron's arm as we walked through the garden.
I'll say.
Aaron made a smart little face at me, and I fought the urge to hit him.
How was it?
At that, I really did hit him. You pig. A lady never tells.
Well, is a real lady meant to be photographed kissing her suitor in the dark?
I shrugged. Either way, it worked. The pictures of Kyle and me were gobbled up like food, just as predicted. It felt a little strange that this was what people were hungry for, but it didn't really matter as long as they were satisfied. The reactions to the kiss ranged, though. A handful of the papers thought it was sweet, but the majority of them were displeased that I was so willing to give up a kiss this early in the competition. One of the gossip magazines even had a back and forth with two of their biggest reporters over whether I was loose for giving such a kiss, or if it was sweet because I'd known Kyle since birth. I tried to shrug it off. There would be other things to talk about soon enough. I dug a few pages in, I said, turning back to Aaron. Not a single report of post-caste discrimination.
So, what are your plans for today?
Going to make the boys cry again?
I rolled my eyes. It was only one, and I don't know. Maybe I won't visit them today.
Nope, Aaron blurted, moving us to a new path. So help me, Edlin. If I have to drag you by your hair through this, I will. But you actually got to participate in the selection.
I let my arm slip away from his. I can't help feeling there's no way it was this hard for Dad.
Have you asked him?
No, and I don't think I can. Just recently, both he and Mom have been giving me more details, thinking it might be helpful. I feel like they must have held those things close to them for a reason, and it seems rude to ask. Besides, I don't know that any two people in this situation would handle it the exact same way, and I really don't want to know if Dad cared about anyone besides Mom.
Isn't that a strange thought?
He sat on a nearby stone bench.
Some other woman could have been our mother.
No, I countered, joining him. We only exist because they found each other. Any other combination would not have created the two of us.
You're messing with my head, Edie.
Sorry. The situation is throwing me off. I trace my finger around the stone. I mean, I get why the concept sounds appealing. That somewhere out there my perfect match could be waiting for me, and by chance I could pull his name and meet him and fall madly in love. But then there's the feeling of being a prize horse, that I'm being judged more so than usual. And when I look at all these boys, they seem foreign in comparison to the type of people I generally encounter, and I don't think I like it. The whole thing makes me feel unsettled. Aaron was quiet for a while, and I could see he was carefully choosing words, which made me nervous. I wasn't sure if that was a twin thing or a bond exclusive to Aaron and me, but it was almost physical when we were at odds. It felt like a rubber band pulling tight between us.
Listen, Edie, I know this might have been the wrong way to go about it, but I do think it's good for you to have someone in your life. I've been with Camille a long time, and even if everything ended tomorrow, I'd be a better person because of her. There are some things you don't learn about yourself until you let someone else into the most intimate places of your heart.
How can you two even manage to do that? You spend almost all of your time apart. He grinned.
She's my soulmate. I know it.
I don't think soulmates are real, I said, examining my shoes. You happen to meet a French princess because you only ever meet royalty, and you like her more than anyone else. Your true soulmate could be milking a cow right now, and you'd never know.
You're always so down on her.
His tone made the invisible rubber band stretch again. I'm simply discussing possibilities.
In the meantime, you have dozens of possibilities in front of you, and refuse to look at them.
I snorted. Did Dad put you up to this?
No. I think you should look at this with an open mind. You're one of the most isolated people in the country, but that doesn't mean your walls have to be up all the time. You need to experience a romantic relationship at least once in your life.
Hey, I've experienced romantic relationships.
A picture in the paper does not count as a relationship, he said heatedly. Neither does making out with Laurent Troyes at that Christmas ball in Paris.
I gasped. How do you know about that?
Everyone knows about that.
Even Mom and Dad?
Dad doesn't know. Well, unless Mom told him, because I'm positive she does.
I buried my face and made some screechy sound that encapsulated my complete humiliation.
All I'm saying is, this could be good for you.
That line pushed all the shame out of my body and replaced it with rage. Everyone keeps saying that. It might be good for me. What does that even mean? I'm smart and beautiful and strong. I don't need to be rescued. Aaron shrugged.
Maybe not, but you never know if one of them might need to be.
I stared at the grass, considering that. I shook my head.
What are you doing, Aaron? What's with the sudden change of heart? I thought you were on my side.
I saw a flicker of something in his eyes before he pushed it away and put an arm around me.
I am, Edlin. You, Mom, and Camille are the most important women in my life.
so please understand me when I say that sometimes I wonder how happy you are.
I'm happy, Aaron. I'm the princess. I have everything.
I think you're mistaking comfort for joy.
His words vaguely reminded me of my recent chat with Mom. Aaron rubbed my arm and stood, brushing off his suit.
I promised Caden I'd help with his French lesson. Just think about all this, okay? Maybe I'm wrong. It certainly wouldn't be the first time.
We shared a smile. I nodded. I'll think about it. He gave me a wink.
Go on a date or something. You need to get a life.
I stood outside the door to the men's parlor pacing, worrying I was wasting time. After my talk with Aaron, I really should have gone straight to the office. Truthfully, I was looking forward to getting back to the normal monotony of shuffling papers. But his words, above anyone else's, made me wonder if I should at least try. And not the fake trying I was planning for the cameras, but genuine effort. I told myself that I would have to date them eventually anyway. It was the bare minimum of what I'd need to do. It didn't mean I was choosing anyone. I was just keeping my promise to Dad and doing what the people expected. Sighing, I handed the envelope to the butler.
Okay, go ahead.
He bowed before he left, and I waited outside. I decided I wasn't going to barge into the men's parlor again. I wanted the selected to be on their toes, but everyone needed a retreat now and then. I knew that better than anybody. A moment later, the butler returned, holding the door as Hale stepped out. Two things passed through my head as he approached. First, I wondered what Kyle would think, which, admittedly, was odd. Second, it was obvious Hale still didn't know what to make of me, because he was very cautious as he came to a stop about 2 feet away and bowed.
Your Highness?
I clasped my hands in front of me. You may call me Edlin. There was a hint of a smile in his eyes.
Edlin?
No one in the world is as powerful as you. I was wondering if you'd like to join me for dessert tonight after dinner.
Just you and me?
I sighed. Was there someone else you wanted to invite? Do you need a translator as well?
No, no,
he said, a real smile coming across his face.
I'm just pleasantly surprised, I guess.
Oh. It was a pathetic response to such a sweet admission, but I simply wasn't prepared. Hale stood there, his hands jammed in his pockets, beaming, and it was hard to think of him as another person I'd just send home. Anyway, I'll come by your room about 20 minutes after dinner, and we'll go to one of the parlors upstairs.
Sounds great. See you tonight.
I started walking. See you tonight. I was a little bothered because I was looking forward to it now. His anticipation was kind of cute. But worse than the feeling that the selection was getting to me was the triumphant look on Hale's face when he caught me peeking back at him. Chapter 14. Would it be strange if I changed dresses between dinner and dessert? Was he going to change clothes? I'd been wearing tiaras for the last few days, but was it inappropriate if I wore one on a date? On a date. This was too far out of my comfort zone. I felt so vulnerable, which I couldn't understand. I had interacted with plenty of young men. I did have that spectacular interlude with Laron at that Christmas party, and Jameson Ackers fed me a strawberry lip-to-lip hidden behind a tree at a picnic. I'd even made it through last night with Kyle, though that was nothing close to a real date. I had met all 35 of the selected candidates and stood tall through every minute. Not to mention, I helped run an entire country. Why was one date with one boy making me so anxious? I decided that yes, I would change. And I put on a yellow dress that was longer in the back than in the front, which I paired with a navy belt, so it looked a little less, I'm ready for the garden party, and a little more, let's go out. And no tiara. Why had I even considered it?
I gave my reflection a once-over and reminded myself that he was trying to win me over, not the other way around. I jumped at the knock on the door. I still had 5 minutes, and I was supposed to go to him. He was throwing off my entire preparation strategy, and so help me, I'd send him away and start all over again if I had to. Without waiting for an answer, Aunt May poked her head in, Mom smiling right behind her.
Aunt May!
I ran over and crushed her in a hug. What are you doing here?
I figured you could use some extra support, so I came back.
And I'm here to make this whole thing more awkward than it has to be, Mom promised with a smile. I laughed nervously. I'm not used to this. I don't know what to do. Aunt May cocked an eyebrow.
According to the papers, you're doing very well.
I blushed. That was different. It wasn't an actual date. It didn't mean anything. But this does? She asked, her voice gentle. I shrugged. It's not the same. I know everyone says this, Mom began, pushing back my hair. But it's the best advice I can give you. Be yourself. That was easier said than done. Because who was I, really? One half of a set of twins? The heir to a throne? One of the most powerful people in the world? The biggest distraction in the country? Never just daughter, never just girl.
Don't take any of this too seriously.
Aunt May fixed her own hair in the mirror before turning back to me.
You should just enjoy yourself.
I nodded. She makes a good point, Mom agreed. It's not as if we want you to choose someone today. You have time here, so have fun meeting some new people. Goodness knows that's a rarity for you. True. It just feels awkward. I'm going to be alone with him, and then he'll tell all the other guys about it, and then we'll have to talk about it on TV. It sounds harder than it is. Most of the time it's funny, Mom insisted. I tried to imagine teenage her, blushing and talking about her dates with Dad. So you didn't mind it? She pursed her lips together, studying the ceiling as she thought. Well, it was harder in the beginning. I was very hesitant to be the center of attention. But you're brilliant at that, so treat this like any other party or event you'd give an interview about. May looked at her. It's not exactly like a post-Grateful Feast recap, she pointed out before focusing on me. But your mother is right about you being better in the spotlight. She was embarrassing at your age. Thanks, May. Mom rolled her eyes. Anytime. I chuckled, wishing briefly that I had just one sister. Mom's other sister, Aunt Kenna, died years ago of a heart condition. Uncle James was a simple man, so he didn't want to raise Astra and Leo in the palace, even though we offered several times. We kept in touch, of course, but Astra and I were very different girls. Still, I remembered all too clearly the way Mom had spent a week in bed holding May and Grandma Singer after Kenna passed away. More and more, I wondered if losing a sister was like Mom losing part of herself. I knew it would feel like that for me if anything happened to Aaron. Aunt May elbowed Mom and they shared a smile. They never really fought, not over anything that truly mattered, and the two of them soothed my worries. They were right. This was nothing. You're going to do great, Mom said. You don't know how to fail. She gave me a wink, and I felt myself stand taller. I checked the clock. I should go. Thanks for coming, I said, taking Aunt May's hand. No problem. I hugged her at the door and then headed downstairs. When I got to Hale's room, I paused and drew in a deep breath before I knocked. He answered, not his butler, and he seemed thrilled to see me.
You look fantastic, he said.
Thank you, I answered, smiling in spite of myself. So do you. He'd changed too, which made me feel much more comfortable, and I liked what he'd done with himself. His tie was gone, and he had his top button undone.
Between that and the vest, he looked... well, he looked huge.
Hale tucked his hands into his pockets.
So, where are we going?
I pointed down the hall.
This way, up to the fourth floor.
He rocked on his feet a few times, then hesitantly held out his arm for me.
Lead the way.
All right, I began as we walked toward the stairs. I know the basic facts. Hale Garner, 19 years old, Belcourt. But those entry forms are a little cut and dried.
So what's your story?
He chuckled.
Well, I too am the oldest in my family.
Really?
Yes, three boys.
Ugh, I feel bad for your mother. He smiled.
She doesn't mind. We remind her of Dad. So when one of us is a little too loud or laughs at something he would have, she'll sigh and say we're just like him.
I was afraid to ask, but I wanted to be clear.
Are your